At the end of the miller's tale, the audience of pilgrims laughs heartily, including the gentles and the clerics. The only one who does not laugh is the reeve, who grumbles because he thinks it was directed against him. For though he is now the manager of a rural estate, he has been a carpenter, like the cuckolded husband of the miller's tale. The reeve's bawdy tale follows his sermonizing preface, where he says that old men, like himself, who are past doing naughty deeds, have an ineradicable urge to tell naughty tales, as well as other vices, boasting, lying, anger, greed. His sermonizing is interrupted by the host, who insists he get on with his story, which turns out to be another fablio, this time about a proud and crafty miller who is nevertheless outwitted by two students. The miller of the reeve's tale, Simon, or Simkin, is proud of what he thinks is his wife's noble lineage. She is the bastard daughter of the local priest. Her ambitious parents and grandfather have plans to marry the girl into the aristocracy, no less. The miller is also proud of his ability to cheat the representatives of the intelligentsia. Two cocky students with provincial accents, from a small northern village, get permission from the head of their Cambridge college to take the college grain to be ground, convinced that, unlike their sick manciple, they can outwit the miller. But they are no match for Simkin and his wife, who let the student's horse loose to run after the local wild mares. Most of the day is spent trying to catch him, so the miller's wife has ample time to bake into a sizable cake the flour her husband has stolen. Simon the miller and his wife had studied applied economics, how to take friends and fleece the people, how to divert the attention of the client, how to conceal the take, how to make the client pay for his fleecing, and so on. But they were absent for the lecture on keeping sober until the deal is complete. Hence their failure to realize that if you get drunk on a combination of ale and victory over the intelligentsia, and if you let two-legged stallions loose in your house, they will behave like the four-legged one that you released earlier when you diverted the attention of the clients. For the students are forced to stay the night and have to share the only bedroom in the house with the miller and his family, since they could not expand the space with their philosophical reasoning, as the miller had taunted them to do. But when the proximity to the miller's wife and daughter expands their erotic desires, the knowledge of the philosophy of law suggests to Alan a legal theory to justify his urge to combine vengeance and sexual relief. "For, John, there is a law that says thus, that if a man in one point be aggrieved, that in another he shall be relieved. And since I shall have no amendment against my loss, I will have easement." The delicious mingling of the legal and sexual meanings of relieved and easement shows the value of a university education when you need a law to justify your lust. As a result of the night's experience that follows this reasoning, they both return to Cambridge qualified to give lectures on how to use your knowledge of law and literary convention to swive the rustic aristocracy, and get your money back. For they do take the cake in more senses than one. The miller's reaction is grotesque when he finds out what Alan and his daughter have been doing all night. He lets out a howl of rage that his daughter, this girl he thinks so highly descended, has been swived by an uplandish clerk with an uncouth accent. His delusion of marrying her into blood of ancestry is shattered. Her blood of ancestry is the blood of her grandmother, who bequeathed to her only a weakness for sweet-talking clerks with a lot of brass. Here is the reeve's response to the miller's tale, and the reeve's own tale, read by Ron Keith.